Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 598. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Shahid. What is up, good sir?
Nothing much. I hope everyone's enjoying themselves this fine week.
Yeah, I mean, how could you not? Well, actually, I'm almost in the same position. Like, this commute, like, there's nothing... the only thing good about my commute currently is that I have a job. It's a rough one.
I can imagine. So
I haven't had the various and sundry problems. I just have one problem that's permanently there, at least for the near future. We'll see if I can talk myself into, you know, maybe one day at home at least. That would be really great. But anyway, there is plenty of wrestling to watch still these days, we may or may not complain about. And we're going to start the same spot that Chris and I started at, which is... Mustafa Ali joining Retribution. I definitely need to hear your take first, since as I said before the show, I know that it's going to be a little bit different than what Chris and I talked.
It's funny because I don't know if it was on purpose. I'm easy to say it's by accident, because a lot of WWE's best stuff is by accident. But talk about long-term booking. I remember when Mustafa Ali was this whole man behind the hacker thing, and it was kind of like that was just done and then not talked about and just forgotten. And it's kind of like, you know, what's Mustafa Ali doing? He's prowling around with those losers, Ricochet and Apollo Crews. He should be doing so much better. And I was watching Monday, and this is a funny dynamic, because like the Hurt Business are heels, yet they defend Raw against Retribution. And they work together with babyfaces against Retribution. And it's kind of like, you know, they got a weird code of honor.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They're like heels, like Lex Luthor's a heel. Like, I'm defending the earth against bad guys, even though I'm a bad guy myself, type thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a lot of classic heel in them where, like you said, like, outside forces are more the enemy than your regular, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, I guess, kind of situation.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, you know, we've seen Retribution come in, do their thing, so it's like, okay, same as before, and it's like, you know, it's funny, MVP is telling Ali, like, come on, what you doing, let's fight, like, we're all in this together, and you see them all team up together, then as soon as Ali left the ring, I'm like, something's up. Because it made no sense for him to leave the ring, like, unless he's going, like, let's work it out, let's talk it out. And then he's there, he looks at him, and then he starts to smile, turn around, and MVP face just drops, like, what in the world is this? And then they get jumped, and you see, you know, Ali standing there, basically, like, not just part of Retribution, you know, it's implied, like, he's the leader and mouthpiece of Retribution. And... on a storyline purpose, it makes sense. It gives Ali something to do. You can build up that whole background, like, you know, him being a hacker, him working behind the scenes, and him being aggrieved because it's kind of like Kofi Kingston basically stole his stole his shot. Not WrestleMania shot, but like Kofi Mania started because Mustafa Ali got hurt.
Yeah.
And it's like he's been playing catch up ever since. And so he can have something to complain about. The outside optics, I mean, I know people try to, like, separate the two, but it's impossible because you know how Vince McMahon votes and you know who he rolls around with. And all the jokes about Retribution has been kind of like, you know, what an old Republican would think Antifa really looks like. So having them led by a former cop who decides to lead the police force because he realized, you know, you can't solve the problem from within, who had basically preached about Black Lives Matter, defunding the police. Having that type of person head Retribution is definitely a choice.
yeah, I mean, at least from my perspective, like, they're really putting him in a prominent position and something that, honestly, like, an angle that has been dead in the water for months is, like, there's actually potential here. There are definitely optics to be had. And it is kind of funny, just Mustafa Ali's, in general, like, I think he's been pretty candid about the fact that he didn't really want to be, you know, the classic evil Arab guy at some point. So it's kind of interesting that he's decided to go with this, something that he has kind of generally been against, too.
I mean, it wasn't like he didn't want to be a heel just because of who he was. He wanted to be a heel based on his actions. Because the funny thing was how he presented himself when he, like, when 205 Live starts talking about, you're going to see me and you're going to hear my name and see where I come from and you're going to automatically boo me. You know, I'm an American and I, you know, I'm just like you. And they cheered him. And he was like, oh, it's not Muhammad Hassan era anymore. It's like they accept people because, like, he heard what he said. It's like, okay, you're right. You cool. We're going to cheer you. And it was just weird because it was kind of like, I thought he was going to be a heel when he first came to 205 Live, but it's kind of like they didn't go that way, just accept him for who he was. And it just worked because he's like, he's a natural baby face. Like, he's easy to cheer for him. Like, he has an awesome story. I remember those promos he would cut, like the black and white ones in the rain. The ones it's like he was doing himself till WWE kind of co-opted it. It was like it just felt organic.
Yeah.
And that injury happened, and then it was kind of like, you know, he's finding his footing again. I wasn't expecting this. It definitely helps him because it gives him something to do. I always say about Retribution, kind of like, how you feel about them depends on if you're on Twitter or not.
Oh.
Because if you're not on Twitter, they seem like a bunch of skinny goofballs. Doing a Bane, and one of them doing a Bane impersonation. If you're on Twitter, they basically know everything you're saying about them and just runs with it. And it's kind of like they have a lot. The tide has turned with them as far as like social media image because they're awesome at social media. Like they, a person said, if you take somebody make a joke about you, if you just claim that joke, you take away the power. Like people are making Bane jokes, and then they start making the jokes. And it's like, okay, well, they already know how it comes off. I can't even clown them about that. People, you know, Jericho would say something, they clown Jericho. Bischoff would say something, they clown Eric Bischoff. Like, people kept trying to come after him, and they just kept, like, slaying them down. And it's just the whole thing. It's like, oh, these guys are cool after all. Even though it's like, that's such a small percentage point, you would think. But
oh.
I'm curious to see where it goes, because it's like, you know, Raw is just in a funny thing where it's like it's a lot of things going on that has nothing to do with Drew McIntyre. Even though he's the champ. He never feels like he's like, the champ never feels like he's the focal point of the show. But he doesn't feel like he's buried either. He just feels like he's doing his own thing.
Well, you're always in a weird spot with any Randy Orton feud, I think. Because Randy Orton does not get paid to wrestle matches for the most part. Like, that guy does a great job of having these long, drawn-out feuds, and he wrestles, like, once every 3 weeks. You know, in some type of a tag match. He is definitely the definition of work smarter, not harder.
20 years in the game, we're just trying to impress on Raw.
So, you know, I do think that that's helped kind of McIntyre not be as visible as some other champions in the past. Like you said, like, he's on, I mean, come on, he's feuding with Randy Orton. Like, he has a pretty prominent spot on the show. But they, in the past, they just overdo it so much and just have the champ in, like, 3 to 4 segments. And the fact that he's only been in maybe 2 a week is, that's really helpful, honestly. Yeah, like, he's there, but he's not worn out.
Exactly. A little goes a long way, and him piling around with the Street Profits works, because it's kind of like Street Profits help him. he helps the Street Profits as far as like credibility and pizzazz. And like, I don't have a problem with Drew McIntyre. It's just weird. It's just ever since he's had the title, and even though he's been in high profile stuff, it's never felt like it's him. Like he's like the focal point. It's kind of like he's a focal point. Because like before, it was like, it even felt like it was the Hurt Business or whatever Seth Rollins was doing.
Oh.
And I'm just gonna say this out there. They need to cut this shit out with this whole Buddy Murphy and Aaliyah crap. Like, no. The fact that they had to stress that she is of age is like, if you have to reinforce that, not even talk about all the stuff some of your wrestlers on your roster have been kind of getting into, because they would treat that age as like, you know, a suggestion and not a stopping point. You got a problem. I'm like, what's the end game?
I don't know. Like, that's one that I still can't figure out. Like, there isn't a good ending to that. If she turns on the rest of the Mysterio family, what do Rollins and Murphy really, like, what do they have to do to follow up? Like, she can't be in the ring. And if she finally ends up realizing that she's wrong, like, that's not one of those, Rey Mysterio, he can't go, "Ha, told you so." Like, that doesn't make Rey look any better than already calling his daughter naive to start with.
Like, y'all just having the most pure baby face of his era insult his daughter and having his wife and son look at him like he's Al Bundy. Like, for what purpose? You feel in the Murphy Mysterio era, like his Triple H and Stephanie, like is Aaliyah going to turn on Rey? And like, what? This whole thing is weird. Like, all of it's weird. Because half the time, Murphy is beefing with Seth Rollins. But, you know, they team up when they don't team up. And then Dominic has to wrestle because Rey's hurt. Berto Carrillo's is there because it's like, you know, we got anything else for him to do. He's tired of him beating up other Mexicans. So, have him team up with Rey's son because we need to have the same old tag match every damn week. And then Aaliyah's out there with an outfit that probably costs more than my mortgage. Don't hurt Murphy. He didn't mean it. And they're looking at him like, you saw he trying to cripple Dad. What's he doing?
Did you see him beat me with the Singapore cane? Or was that my imagination?
Seth's out there, CrossFit Joe Osteen with his glove, talking his nonsense. He's either beating up Murphy or using Murphy to beat up Dominic and mess with Murphy. I need your promise to leave Aaliyah alone. She ain't do nothing. But what are we doing? I didn't know we could get more ridiculous to when Eddie and Ray was fighting over Dominic's parentage. And then I thought they were going that way again. Was like a couple weeks ago, like, you know, look at the lead, look how tall she is. Look at the rest of you midgets. You sure your wife wasn't stepping out? I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, my wife did kind of get a kick out of the fact that Ray is the shortest one in that family.
Close.
Uh-uh.
Like, that's, I mean, the funny thing is, it's ridiculous, but it's entertaining.
Oh.
Like, and that's how Raw has seen, like, Raw's been lately. It's kind of like, it's ridiculous, but entertaining. Like, how many times will Nia Jax put
Lana through a table?
Lana through a table. Even when they tease, like, okay, oh, it's going to be Natty this time. No. Who's you get? Like, Charlie Brown with the football.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny gimmick for her to have. Does not exactly scream "We have faith in your wrestling" anymore. But it is kind of a funny thing, and I guess I do like Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler just being more generally destructive, even if they do kind of have their own problems with each other from time to time.
Or Rhea Ripley. She had a look on her face like, yeah, I don't think I'm ever getting off of cocaine. When she got put to sleep, they took that's when she got put to sleep by Nia, and somebody took a screenshot of that, and you know, I just had face like, yeah, I'm just gonna have a bad month, and it's like the fourth. That's the look she had on her face.
Oh,
and Morgan running in to save her, and it's kind of like, it's funny where I like the Rascal as a team, and they have, like, the two of them without that Viking goofball work a lot better, because it seems like they have more in common. Like, Sarah Logan always the oddball, even though they all got along. Like, Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott have the same type of energy. But I'm watching, I'm like, it ain't no way in the world they beat those two.
Oh.
Like, it's just no way, because it's kind of like, we've talked about this, they're just too dominant.
Oh, yeah, like, their level of bickering hasn't really ever gotten too bad. Like, because I feel like, Sheamus and Cesaro, when they first kind of started to team up, like, they were literally costing themselves the match. And even though they kind of, you know, Jax and Baszler kind of tease each other, they've never really gotten to, like, completely screwing the other person over. And that, that's an obstacle, like, too hard to overcome for most teams. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Riott Squad gets a title reign at some juncture, but it's just not happening right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, it had to be, like, some banana peel type thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, somebody gets hurt and it's a fluke, because it's kind of like, sooner or later they're going to win it. I just think it's going to be more later than sooner. But who knows with the draft coming up. Starts Friday, concludes Monday, so, but, yeah, I got, you know, and hopefully they clear this up so they bring back Raw Underground. I've noticed, it's funny, all the jokes about it, it not being there was very noticeable. It's like, oh, we got another hour. I'm just... Oh. Regular wrestling.
Well, and they did, because, it was this week. At least they had a segment with Braun Strowman, like, I know there's no Raw Underground. Like, that's the first thing out of his mouth. Like, that has to be, like, and it has been kind of weird with them not, like, I don't feel like they explained why it wasn't there or even really said anything last week when nothing happened. And this week, at least they kind of pointed it out. But that did kind of lead to another fun moment of the night with Keith Lee and Braun Strowman squaring off. Like, I guess I knew from the jump that I wasn't going to see a finish to that, so I wasn't too terribly disappointed when that thing ended in a DQ or double count out or whatever the hell it ended in.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously, bad music aside, see something Keith Lee and want to protect him, not have him lose. And it's kind of like Braun Strowman, still Braun Strowman. If he's not wrestling Bray Wyatt, he tends to beat up everybody else. So.
Oh, yeah.
But I hate those whole things. Like, we have a match between people we know we both like, but we don't want either one of them to lose. And I'm like, then don't have them wrestle. Or have a tag match. It's like that non-finished stuff gets old. Like, it's don't have people wrestle against each other if you can't have a finish. Unless it's building into something important. Like, I've always hated that. No matter how long I've seen him wrestling. But, you know, Braun runs him through the barricade, and Keith Lee pops up 30 seconds later like it's no big thing. And it's like, oh, yeah. Because it's like Keith Lee's one of the few people where it feels like he's not. He can stand toe-to-toe with Braun Strowman, and it doesn't seem like it's unbelievable.
Like, he definitely is one of the few guys that physically can stand up to Braun Strowman. It kind of helps. And they've done a great job of, even though Lee has been involved in just more DQ finishes than I would prefer, in his early run here. Because, I mean, I think he had... Didn't he have... He had at least one match with Orton interfered with. And did he have a match with McIntyre that was interfered with by Orton?
Probably.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, this first month plus of Keith Lee has definitely led to a lot of DQs. And, but him popping up after the barricade bit, you know, was another one of those moments where they're at least giving him moments to shine, even if he does, in this case, kind of look like the guy that's getting beat up. That's kind of like the Undertaker sitting, you know, like that is a version of the Undertaker sitting up, you know. It's just kind of supposed to pop you a little bit and prove to you how badass that guy is. So, yeah, Keith Lee's in good hands, but I would prefer less and less DQ finishes in his matches. Because, yeah, they've just teased a lot. Like, he's been in there with a lot of big names just to start things off in his Raw career. It's kind of interesting. He has definitely not gone the squash match route.
Yeah, they're contrary to belief, they are not burying Keith Lee. So... I mean, I know he had that stupid music, but that's more a fact. It's kind of like most people that had new music has been stupid. Like, Jim Johnson's not walking through those doors, and CF Dollar Signs aren't walking through those doors, unfortunately. Because besides the Hurt Business, I'm trying to think of the last person that had music that's relatively new that didn't sound like complete garbage.
Well... I know that Chris does not like the band Code Orange, but I guess that they do Bray Wyatt's music, so I'm just going to be partial to it because okay. I like their cacophony of sound, but I know that is not everyone's taste.
I mean, it's just noticeable, and it's kind of like you don't realize how lucky they've been with music until they haven't had it, because I'm like, since I've been growing up as a kid, they had good. Since the 80s, WWE's had, like, good entrance music. And I think I started noticing, like, when Bailey changed hers. I'm like, what is this generic nonsense? And that's all the new music, it just sounds generic and just dull. And Seth Rollins sound like, you know, like Fox News is about to attack me. Like, I'm just waiting for somebody to start hollering at me about, you know, that deep state. Like, like, that's why people say, oh, Roman Reigns needs to get new music. I'm like, no, he don't. unless he get it from Cypress Hill or somebody. Like, he does not need to get no new music from that garbage they've been putting out. Ask Keith Lee about how deep music goes.
Well, I mean, there's no one that sticks out to me that I could think about because, like, it's always the stupid things that stick out to me about the entrance music, like Ricochet's ping at the beginning of his, or the creaking sound for Aleister Black. Like, there's not a music, like... As terrible as, like, Ass Man was, like, it's unforgettable.
I have heard people play that in their car. I have been out driving, and I've heard people, like, next to me playing that damn song, like, last year, 2019. you could say a lot of things about that the old WWE music. It was memorable. Like, you know, and yeah. I know it's kind of like a side note, but it's a good topic. You ever listen to some of the lyrics to some of those old songs?
No, I haven't gone back to listen to too many of those. Like, I've watched some of the older shows, but no, I definitely have not paid attention to the music when I've been watching those ones.
Triple H song sound like he's a loan shark. Talk about stupid loan debt. I'm the debt you never gonna pay. Like, you know, look over your shoulder, ready to run. Like, every time I hear Triple H, like, every time I hear Triple H music, I'm probably like, yeah, somebody owe him money. And he warned you, he gonna get it.
Was that one of his earlier musics, like Hunter Hearst?
No, his current music.
Oh, his current music?
The game. Yes, I'm the game. You don't want to play me. I'm heavy debt. You won't be able to pay me. I'm like,
oh, yes, I'm my like, God.
Yes. I'm like, yes. Triple H is up here representing Sally Mae. Like, The Miz. His whole thing. I came. Yeah, like, even like little stuff like The Miz, you know. I thought you thought you'd be safe, but you can't be saved. I came to play. I'm here to celebrate. Like, you know, basically, now I'm going to celebrate on your ass. Like catchy stuff. But you don't think about it because, like, you just hear the song. You just bob your head to it. And, no, some of the lyrics, some of those songs, beside Ass Man, are just hilarious. But I always bring it up because the women have some filthy-ass lyrics. Oh, they used to. Oh. They clean that up. They don't anymore. But I would just say they either talk about how beautiful I am and you can look but you can't get anything of that. Like the Bellas used to brag about, you know, you can look but you can't touch. That's why you're on the ground with all them other losers. Or they go the route of Candace Michelle. And I would just say, yeah, go to Google and listen to her lyrics. And I'm surprised they let those lyrics fly. And I'll just leave it at that.
Oh.
Her bragging about her bomb ass body parts making men their slaves and them begging like a dog. Did not seem like the PG era, but then like that was the ruthless. That was technically the ruthless aggression era. But I'm like, yeah, some of that shit was filthy. Like you're not hearing that now.
Oh yeah, they have definitely cleaned things up a little bit from that point. these days, yeah, ruthless aggression still wasn't quite. I mean, PG era was after that, right? Yeah. Like, directly after that?
Yes, that was directly after that. That's what people, and people blame John Cena. Talking about, oh, I can't do it like I used to because we got the sponsors. So I got the Fruit Loops. So, I mean, but actually, I don't really mind because I'm kind of like, I'm old now. And cursing, you don't need to curse to feel like a grown up. And to be perfectly honest, and we've talked about it. We don't need to go in depth. That attitude era stuff does not age well. And a lot of that ruthless aggression stuff aged worse. Like, I would say on some points, the ruthless aggression era was far cruder than the attitude era. Because I'm like, you know, Tori Wilson, Dawn Marie happened on the ruthless aggression era. That was not the attitude era's watch.
Oh, yeah, I would not be surprised, like, if that was, it was a more salacious era, because, I'm not sure if the, I'm trying to find a good way to word this, the good looks era was more in style in the ruthless aggression era. I just feel the women's division was still kind of being built up, and like you did have like, you know, Lita and Trish during the Attitude Era, but those the ladies that came after them kind of had a hard gig to follow up on, just because those two were so good. And
it wasn't just that. It was like you had Trish and Lita at the top, but you had people like, you know, Molly Holly, like Jacqueline. Like you had a bunch of women that could wrestle, like Ivory. Like you had like women who could wrestle, like underneath there,
yeah,
like Jazz and people like that, Victoria. And then later it was kind of like, okay, we hire models. If you learn how to wrestle, that's fine. And if you're on SmackDown, you're not, the title's on Raw. So if you're on SmackDown, you're the woman. Good luck. You're just fighting just to fight. Like, you know, Tori Wilson fought her whole career for nothing.
She
was almost always on SmackDown. It's like, what's there to win on SmackDown?
I think she did end up getting one, like, Raw title reign at some juncture, I feel like, to kind of acknowledge how much hard work she had put on SmackDown and not gotten anything for it.
It's just, yeah, like, you know, it's kind of like you, it was just a limit that you could do if you was in a certain spot. And, you know, like I've talked about it, you couldn't even fathom seeing Bayley and Sasha Banks in a bra and panties match. Like,
oh,
I couldn't wrap my head at like some, like, and that was normal. Pillow fight match, putting matches, like, that was just, you know, we just accepted that. And if you smile like, damn, you're going tonight, Zelina Vega versus Shayna Baszler on a panties on a pole match. What? Like, can you imagine? Twitter would lose their damn mind with good reason, because it's kind of like, we don't do that nonsense anymore. And I'm glad we don't. And I thought about that, because I guess we could segue to NXT. It seemed like NXT went from not having any women to having almost too many women.
Yeah, that, because it was kind of one thing that I also forgot about, the fact that the big reveal that had been teased was Ember Moon, but I also forgot that Toni Storm popped up on the Titantron, or whatever they're calling it these days, to also throw her hat into the mix. It's just like, I know that they lost Mia Yim and Mercedes Martinez. Did they replace them with better people?
Yes, because Mia Yim had nothing. Like, she did everything she's going to do in NXT. And
yeah.
If you're not putting the title on her, there's no point in her being there. And Mercedes Martinez is kind of like, unless she's there to be a worker, she's wasted there anyway. Like, you don't need, like,
she doesn't need seasoning after.
Yeah, she don't need that. After 20 years in the indies, she don't, you don't need to teach her anything else. It was like when Eric Young was in NXT. I'm like, for what? But so, yes, they replaced with, I mean, better, because it's kind of like, I'm not as big as Ember Moon fan as other people, and most of that is for, like, not even had to do with wrestling. I just think she's just, the character seems goofy, like a Mortal Kombat reject, but
oh,
she's talented, and
yeah,
you know, I always laugh like, oh, she gets to go back to NXT and get beat up by another Japanese person. I guess she missed that. Asuka was doing it for 6 months. So, but no, her being there helps, because it just adds credibility, and it's like, you know, Finn Balor showed that you can always go back and they love you again. Toni Storm being there works, because it's kind of like, you forget Toni Storm was the rising star until Rhea Ripley changed the haircut.
That and Ripley came over first from NXT UK, since they both got pushed over there to start with. And that certainly helped a bit, too.
I call it, you know, she got Pete Dunned. Because the same thing happened to Tyler Bate. Like, Tyler Bate was the hot thing till Pete Dunne was the hotter thing. And then point where it's like, you had to remember that, oh yeah, Tyler Bate is pretty good. It's like, we forgot because Pete Dunne was good and cool, and Tyler Bate didn't seem cool. And the same thing with Toni Storm. Like, Toni Storm was, oh, you know, oh, she Aussie, she rock star, she hot, she got a big butt, she can fight, she's young. And then Rhea Ripley changed her look, because you remember when she first looked there, she looked like, you know, Charlotte Jr.
Oh.
One day she got, you know, piercings, and she got a mohawk and spikes, and it's like, oh, who's this? And Toni Storm got pushed in a closet somewhere. It's like, go wrestle Kaylee Ray 45 times over that show that nobody watched. We got a new toy to play with. So to see them both back there helps. And it's funny, it's a lot of people to fight for that title, because you got those two. You got Rhea Ripley. You still got Dakota Kai. You got Candice LeRae doing her Karen routine. And you got Io Shirai at the top, who doesn't care about any of that garbage. Like, I love the character Io Shirai, because she's not a heel. She's just a babyface that don't play games. It's like, that tag crap. I don't care about that. I care about my title. Like, do what y'all want. Like, she'll call out baby faces. Like, I still laugh at, like, that whole thing with Tegan Knox. Like, yeah, Tegan, you're pretty good. You came back from your knee injuries. But we know you can't win by yourself. You always need help. It ain't nobody gonna help you when I beat your ass. And that's exactly what happened. It's kind of like, it's not heelish if it's the truth.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was hilarious when she did that. Like, I about fell out of my seat. And, yeah, she keeps... Yeah, she's like a no-nonsense baby face. And it's a rare thing in the WWE to get that portrayal. But I guess I'm not completely surprised that it's happening on NXT and not on one of the main shows.
The last one we had like that, like... I care about the belt. I don't care about any of this other nonsense. I'm doing what I'm doing. I call a spade, and I'm going to beat you up, and I'm cool. Like, I had to think about it. Probably one of the times when Randy Orton was a babyface, and he was smart, and that made me mad, because, like, how come all the other babyfaces do, like, you know, I ain't going to come out here so you can jump me. Like, when Randy Orton was on SmackDown, I think around, when was it? Like the Mark Henry, when Mark Henry won the title, I'm like, yeah, if I come out here, y'all just going to jump me and anything like that. I'm not an idiot. Like, I'll wait an hour just after the match. Like, he was a babyface champ with common sense. And they felt like it was illegal. Io Shirai's the same way. Like, she just has common sense. She focuses on the belt. She does not take any guff, any nonsense, and all that play things. Like, yeah, you can come out and help me. Don't touch my belt. What the hell wrong with you?
Yeah, I mean, she should act that way, and I do love that. Even though I love my Shotzi, she deserved the ass kicking that she got.
I'm glad you brought her up. I have come over and become a big fan because it's kind of like she's perfect where she can go up and down the card and it fits. If you wanted a title match with Io Shirai, she fits. But if you want to do comedy stuff or just an opening match, she fits that too. It's like she can put her role you want on NXT and it just works because, yeah, she's one. It's like she's a lot bigger than a lot of the girls on there. Like she doesn't seem big because you think of big, you think like Rhea Ripley. Like, but I'm like, Rhea Ripley's tall. Like Shotzi's not necessarily like super tall, but she's not super short. And she definitely kind of feels like, yeah, she can hurt you if she wants. Goofball thing aside, and they obviously like her, you know, having her be the host of Halloween Havoc, and I'm surprised it took them that long to bring that back, honestly.
Yeah, that was one that I was pretty shocked, like, when they're like, yeah, we're bringing back Halloween Havoc, and I'm like, you know, I mean, really, like, they always seem to do something Halloween-related anyway. And if I guess maybe since Cody keeps on trying to trademark stuff for AEW that the WWE has let slip through the cracks somehow, maybe they've realized that maybe they should dig into the old archive for some of these fun.
I think once AEW did Beach Blast, it's like, all right, we got War Games, we got Great American Bash, we got Starrcade. It's like, we're not going to do Super Brawl, so what else can we use? It's like Halloween Havoc fits, because it's kind of like, Halloween Havoc has always been a fun pay-per-view, and Shotzi, you know, that's her thing, so, and NXT, that's NXT's whole thing, is like, let's take old WCW stuff, because Dusty used to be here, and Dusty's the godfather of WC, of NXT, and a lot of people, the godfather of WCW, so always fit. And the one thing I would say, like, feeding all that, they have so many storylines with the women. And it's not just for the title. Like, you know, you got five people fighting over the title. You got Shotzi messing around with Robert Stone and Aaliyah and all that stuff. And then you got, you know, Lacey Lane and Casey Catanzaro with Xia Li. And is Xia Li about to get deported?
Well, that was one thing, and I'm like, well, she's like one of those women that she's on TV enough that you're like, Well, they have some level of faith in her because she's on, you know, she's on probably like every 3 weeks or something like that, which is...
Every 2 weeks, it seems like. Every other week she's on there beating up somebody. And then lately, like, she's been losing. And it's like, yeah, she turned a heel? And everybody like, yeah, she tied all that nice stuff. And they're like, oh, bow. I'm like, how are we supposed to know him? Like, I haven't seen him since he signed there.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they filled us in because I hope they weren't expecting us to know who that was. Because, yeah, I'm just like, oh, it's another Chinese person.
Chinese sensation. I'm like, if you say so. Because like, if you didn't tell me who that was, I wouldn't have guessed who that was. Like, once they said that, I'm like, yeah, I heard that name. But I haven't seen him sit on like the combine or anything like that. And it's kind of like, yeah, they obviously see enough where they build a storyline. And that's the thing about NXT. It's kind of like they have about 3 or 4 storylines involving the women all on a 2-hour show.
Oh.
And none of them seem forced, and all of them seem like they matter. And, you know, between the in-ring stuff and Candice LeRae bragging about her Samsung she got from Indy Hartwell. It's like... I'm here for it. I'm mad. I wish I had a 65-inch TV because somebody liked me.
Yeah, I mean, that was one part that I did really like. Because I'm like, just because, like you said, like a lot of women seem to be after the singles belt. I'm like, I could handle Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell becoming a tag team just because... yeah, and I'm not sold maybe on them beating Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, but they could definitely use another women's tag team around those parts to at least challenge and have them on the show to chew up some time. I mean, I think that'd work out kind of nice. Like... Because, like, I guess I just don't think that Candice is going to get the title. Like, it seems like there are enough women ahead of her that are going to get a title reign that she may as well do something else.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, her and Johnny Gargano being assholes just seem to fit a lot better than them being plucky baby faces.
Yeah, they crack me up. Is the idiots that they are now. Like, I think it took them a little while to figure out the characters, but they've definitely figured them out now, and they're quite enjoyable.
Yeah, I gotta say, NXT, I'm not surprised because NXT has a way of making you care about people you wouldn't care about, and truth be told, I don't know if you saw that tweet I put when it was involving Damian Priest and Io Shirai. It's kind of like, yeah, these are rock stars. And they hyped them up like rock stars. It's kind of like Damian Priest is, he's a baby face that's cool and likes women. That's his whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm cool. I like to fight. When I'm done fighting, I have sex with women in a hot tub. Sometimes Triple H takes a picture with me. When's the last time they had a baby face that was allowed to like women and they didn't think it's a joke?
I don't know. And like, they don't overdo it either. Like, there's so many times, like, where they either get too hubba-hubba with the announcers or with the backstage interviewer, which he hasn't really done. You know, they also don't show him with the women that often enough. Like, it's all just more him talking about the whole situation, which I think helps, too. Like, if you start having him around ladies all the time, sometimes you... I guess my mind would float to, of course, the Godfather if they're there all the time. But if they're just... if he talks about it and then they occasionally pop up, it kind of, to me, is a little bit easier to take him seriously as a champion.
He worked because he's... like the thing, most of the big guys in NXT aren't on NXT anymore. So it's really him and Killian Dane, and they have different body types. Like, he's big, but it's not so big where you don't feel like he cannot be beaten by somebody. But he can hang with almost anybody on the roster because he's not like a klutz. He's agile. So, yeah, I'm a big Damian Priest fan, and I was not a Damian Priest fan at all. Like, I thought this guy was a dude. Is this cornball? Like, I don't see no bow. They call him Archer Infamy. This music is stupid. Like, what? And they, I was like, okay, whatever. And they just kept pushing us down, pushing them down our throat, and they just kept doing and doing. And I think once he became a baby face, it started to click for me. I'm like, I don't know what it is, but I've seen enough. I'm like, he can go in the ring, and he's consistent, whatever. And it really, like, I start being a fan. And him and Io Shirai together, like, you know, if Io say he's cool, who am I to say he ain't cool? Because she don't just give compliments just to give them. Because most of the time she don't like anybody. She's like, yeah, he can be, you know, he cool enough to be my tag team partner.
Yeah, he can go kick rocks for all I care, is her attitude most of the time. So, yeah, the fact that you got a compliment out of her is very high praise.
And he had a good match to take over against Johnny Gargano, and like, they pulled every damn trick in the book. And I laughed, like, Johnny Gargano's had the most matches on Takeover. I'm like, he probably lost about 75% of them too.
Yeah, he's just like Triple H, where you always you're like, oh man, he's just there all the time, but then you realize that his record is not terribly good. Because, what, wasn't Triple H 50% at WrestleMania or something like that?
Yeah, that's why he had to beat Sting to get over 500.
How did Triple H have two matches? Yeah, like, he's at 50%, and there are two matches that he definitely should have lost. Between the Sting one and the Booker T match.
Two is probably more, to be honest. It's kind of like, oh, the WrestleMania 2000 match. It's no way in the world. I know it's like, oh, we're going to run it back at Backlash because Stone Cold coming here. We get the double dip on a pay, you know, on a buy rate. But like, it ain't no way in the world he should have won that WrestleMania 2000 match. And I remember people losing their mind because it was like, policy was the heel champ going to win at WrestleMania. And Triple H was like, fuck all that. I don't care about your damn tradition. I'm doing what I want. I remember people losing. You know, I'm not going to beat up on Triple H. I'm actually a Triple H fan. But I remember people being, I wasn't on the internet, but I remember people being pissed. And I was like, wait. Because I at that point, like, I kind of knew how wrestling went. It was like, all right, it's Mania season. I know they got the Four Corners thing. Rock winning this. That was the whole thing. Like, you know, it's time for Rock to win. Stone Cold ain't ready yet. And nope, Triple H win. Just so he can lose that Backlash. It's like, and that's all that was. It's kind of like, you know, we get to have a big, people gonna buy WrestleMania anyway. And now they could, you know, they'll buy Backlash because they know they'll think I'll probably lose because Stone Cold coming back. And that's what Triple H's thing is like. Yeah, I was going to lose to Booker T, but Goldberg coming, I got to be strong for him. It's always a story excuse. Yeah, you know, Sting should win because I don't got nothing to prove. But now we got to prove we won the Monday Night War. Like, that would just seem stupid. Like, you bring Sting back for him to lose.
Yeah, that's one that just really sticks out in my memory. So that is pretty bad that he's only 50%. He should have probably lost three of the 50%.
Which all those jokes we had at his expense because he got squashed by Ultimate Warrior. He'd be making us pay ever since.
Oh man. I guess someone who's definitely on the uptick, and I'm not sure that I've talked about him yet, Kushida definitely seems to be on a little bit of a roll here, finally, in NXT.
He said he's done being nice. He is wrestling with passion and with an edge. Like he said, all that smiling shit is gone. And for a multitude of reasons, I was enjoying watching him beat the shit out of Velveteen Dream. And I never thought I would say that, but it's like, ooh, for somebody that had so much, Velveteen Dream was it. And now you see him, I just frown my face up like, ugh. And it's like they want us to, it's like they want their cake and eat it too. They keep saying, oh, well, we investigated, and we didn't find nothing, we didn't ask anybody who accused them. But they know people know. And they book him to be a heel. And it's like they want us to boo him and see him get beat. And, yeah, Kushida beat his, he beat his ass. And Kushida's not a big man. He's not like, you don't think of him like ruthless, but I don't know what changed. They decide like, all right, go be tough. Now he's hurting folks.
Yeah, I do think his MMA experience certainly helps him. And I do feel like, and maybe it's more his Ring of Honor stuff that I saw, that I knew he could put on a pretty, like, for a guy that does do some flying around, he really is more of a ground-based wrestler. And like you said, like, it's almost kind of an odd thing since he doesn't have, like, a big frame, you know, he's not kind of like a big and bulky short guy. Like, he's kind of a lanky short guy, so you wouldn't expect that style out of him, but he runs with it quite well.
I just laugh at the fact that Velveteen was getting stretched out by a man in skinny jeans and Marty McFly sneaks. And it just looked really like between the match at TakeOver and then him basically doing the same thing that on Tuesday, it's like, yeah, he's tough. Like, he's a badass, and it works because, like, you see the smiling face. Like, oh, you know, he got the glasses. He's cool. But it's NXT does a good job of when they want to tweak or change somebody's character, they make it believable. And they also do a good job where you don't got to be a big guy to be a tough guy. Like, they have, and it's funny, like most of their tough guys aren't necessarily big guys. And it helps because they don't really have a whole bunch of big guys. And unfortunately, like, the ones that seem like to like enjoy lifting weights keep getting hurt. Because Karrion Kross gets hurt. And then Ridge Holland and his rock and roller gimmick. Yeah, he ain't going to see him for a while.
Yeah, Jeremy's like, Jeremy texted me today. Actually, I should look that up so that I can quote it. Oh, yeah. Explain to me how and why I should stay awake for a Ridge Holland match.
That's the thing. His matches are boring. His gimmick is the cool thing, but it's like, you know, his gimmick is, you know, I used to fight in real life. Now I'm fighting for money. And I got my club. And I got my hat. And I'm just trying to make money. And he works because he's big by NXT standards. Now you put him in SmackDown, you put him next to Sheamus, don't mean nothing. He's just a dude.
He's one of those guys that he's like wide, but he isn't terribly tall.
But, I mean, most people built in NXT are built like Kyle O'Reilly. Like, Dexter Lumis ain't big, but he might as well be Brock Lesnar on that damn roster. Because, you know, it's like some of those people saw, including that new guy, I forgot what his name was. I say he's like a CrossFit crackhead. Like, that's by his build. I'm like, that man, like, about 110 pounds. And they just signed him, you know, they just signed him, like, recently. And Austin Theory was wrestling.
The first guy. Leon Ruff, or do you mean? Yeah.
Yes. And I'm like, wow. by NXT standards, like, they got a band, like, a figure skater out here. So, like, but it, most people at NXT tend to be small, so somebody like Rich Holland stands out. But I'm like, it's this story. His gimmick was the thing going. Like, his match, like, oh, he headbutting people. Whoop de damn dude. It's just kind of like, you know, I didn't like, well, why you beat up Adam Cole? Well, last week I got Benz. This week I got a Benz. That's why I did it. Perfect. That's fighting for money. I can always get behind that. He beat up Adam Cole because somebody paid him to do it. That is logic I like.
And very understandable. And yeah, that was I ended up, I'm like, I saw him getting stretchered off. I must not have been paying attention when it first happened. So I rewound it. I'm like, I guess I'm kind of glad that I didn't really see that. Like, you kind of see it buckle, but the mat's in the way enough that you don't really see it. And after seeing his diagnosis, oh. Just, yeah.
He basically breaks his left ankle and rips up his right knee. Like, yeah, you will not see him till maybe SummerSlam 2021, if he's lucky.
Yeah, that's that's going to be a rough road for him to recover.
They've had bad luck with injuries lately.
Oh, for sure. Well, that, and I mean, because like you said, like, NXT had its own land of the trees, but Keith Lee gets called up, and then Dijakovic gets called up, and that just kind
of... T-Bar, or is he Slapjack?
That's T-Bar.
Oh, those names still...
They're still complete and utter trash. Mustafa Ali might be able to save the angle. Those names will forever be a trash.
Adam Slapjack will never not be funny to me. But you're right, Keith Lee leaves, and Dr. Kobe leaves.
Oh, and Cross isn't champion.
And then he gets hurt, so he wins the belt. And then Finn Balor gets the belt. He keeps getting hurt. And he walks into all, yeah, he's heating soup with straw.
Well,
because he broke his jaw. I'm like, yeah, you see, I'm like, that's why he had a bowl of tomato soup in his mouth after that match in Colorado. I'm like, yeah, y'all like that hard hitting strong style stuff to spitting out teeth. It's like, you don't gotta really hit him. Wrestling's supposed to be like, you know, it look like you hit him. You don't have to actually do it.
Yeah. Well, both of them have spent too much time in Japan and just decided it'd be fun to just really lay it in there. Because what did O'Reilly come out with cracked ribs or something?
He said something like he had, you know, some type of lower, you know, middle body injury. Tomorrow, yeah, he kicked me in the gut, and I knew the match was over. It's like, these small, I know it's like, you overcompensate when you're small, you wouldn't be like, you know, hard-hitting, but wrestling's tough enough. I always tell people all the time, they're wrestling on a tree. That's all the ring mat is covering a tree. Like, it never sunk in till you see those gimmicks where it's like, they tear off the canvas, and you see, oh, it's just wood. Like, man, you're taking a power bomb on a damn oak tree. Like a suplex on a redwood, like that shit's like it hurt, and the ropes are made out of metal. And like, I know y'all badasses just running the ropes, taking a bump. Y'all don't gotta really punch somebody in the face, like. No, they don't do that in movies. The Keanu Reeves like, add action. I'm gonna chop you in the throat for real. Like, no, fake it.
Oh, yeah, it would be. I mean, I did enjoy the match quite a bit, but it does kind of put into context. I kind of laughed when I saw the Finn Balor called match earlier than expected, because I did kind of feel like that finish came out of the blue a little bit. But knowing how jacked up both of them were, it was probably for the best.
Yeah. All right, mate, let's wrap it up. Jack get beat up. I thought we learned our lesson with the Attitude Era when, like, half the roster kept breaking the damn necks. That's why they stopped doing German suplexes for a while. Because, like, that hard-hitting style, like, it's... You don't need it. Like, it's fun, but it ain't really... It's not as fun as it used to be because you know the damage it does on bodies. And we've had too many people, like the elephant in the room, you know who he is. Mr. Crippler Crossface himself was like, you know how he went out. Kind of, boy. Like, certain things you don't see, like, you know, chair shots. If you saw somebody get a chair shot to the head right now, you'd be like, no, this is criminal.
Well, and everyone did rightfully freak out when Cody took one. And then he tried to say it was a gimmick chair.
Oh, so when he sat on it, fell and fall down? Come on, man. I was doing it for lying, a gimmick chair. It wasn't really a chair.
Come on, people. Like, I know that this is a work, but just... It's not that hard to not hit someone in the head. Like, you don't really need to do that. Like you said, like, most of this stuff, like, it really is not necessary to get wrestling over. You know? So why do it?
Because they can't help themselves. Like, you know, I'm going to take a bump on the apron. Like, I'm going to take a German suplex. Like, Shotzi Black, what are you doing? You don't got to prove you tough. Like, that new thing, like, I'm going to take something off the apron that I normally, like, I hate that shit. Like, the ring is tough as it is anyway, and now you're going to make it harder to prove, like, I'm an idiot?
Well, I did kind of laugh because, like, she posted a clip of herself doing it correctly, and someone else posted a clip on Twitter of her doing it correctly. I'm like... But, you did it a bunch of times correctly. Like, do you really need that move in your arsenal? Like, really? Like, just because something like that can happen easily. It's just like, just take it out. Like, it doesn't look that cool that it needs to be in your arsenal. And especially if it's not going to be a finisher or even anything close to a finisher.
Hey, guess what? Matt Hardy used to fall off ladders correctly all the time. Now he walks like he's riding a horse. People ever wonder about that?
I'm still shocked that Jeff Hardy is in a good a shape as he is.
That meth make the bones of rubber. Because it's kind of like Jeff Hardy looks exactly the same he looked in the 90s, but like he gained 10 much-needed pounds. And... He's the exception, not the rule, because most of the people from the Attitude Era are, like, had been retired for a long time and are going bald. Some of them have a midlife crisis coming back, like Edge. But most of them enjoying, like, nah, I don't do that shit. Jeff Hardy crazy ass? He's still doing that because apparently he don't age. He's going to be like, he should have been dead. He don't age. He's still doing the same thing. And Matt is like, every step is a war.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. I'm more than okay that he's decided to take some time outside of the ring because it's much needed.
Yeah, you don't need to prove anything. I mean, you're at that certain point, but yeah, like but anyway, back to NXT. It's kind of like stop doing that hard. Like too many people keep getting hurt. Reasons that, you know, the injury by Rich Holland, it was just like a fluke.
Oh.
He saw somebody, he slipped, and got hurt. Stuff like that, it just happens. But some of that stuff's easily avoidable. You don't have to do all that wild stuff like, you know, like, be like The Rock. The Rock wants to do a little wild shit like that. Like, I've seen him probably fall off a ladder maybe two or three times. He'll go through a table. He might get cut here and there. But all that TLC shit, like, no. All that goofy garbage, I'm going to do a drop kick off the top rope, like, hell was he like, you know what? The Rock here to make money. The Rock ain't making money in the training room, blowing out a knee every time, trying to do some wild shit. And The Rock could have did that, because, you know, Randy Orton used to do that, and then they told him, like, stop doing that, Randy. Ain't where your money at. Rock Lesnar used to do that, too. Damn near died trying to do that. Let the little man do that little man shit. Like, you know, save, be a big man. Be a big man. Don't do that cheap shit because you can.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'll never forget Lesnar almost killing himself. That one's hard to forget.
I was thinking about it because I was watching the Kurt Angle Smoking Skull sessions with Austin. Ooh, I forgot how rough that Shane match was.
Oh.
I did not. On both of them. You know how you used to see that don't try this at home? And it's like, you know, I think I broke my tailbone. Kurt Angle said, yeah, he actually broke his damn tailbone.
Oh, man. I did not realize that.
Yeah, he was like, he took a suplex and he didn't land heel first. He landed ass first and broke like three bones in his tailbone.
Oh.
And it's like early in the match and they continue wrestling the match. That's why he was having such a hard time suplexing Shane through the glass. And another thing they said, they reinforced the glass so it wouldn't break during pyro.
Oh. It's not surprising. I mean, there is definitely some concussive force that goes off with the pyro, so it's got to be at least, you know, so solid for it to put up with that. Oh, that's pretty funny, though. Like, I guess that's something I haven't listened to. But maybe I should give that a listen. That's pretty interesting.
It's definitely interesting. Like, he's upfront and honest. You know, he's still his kind of goofy, earnest way. But he breaks down, like, a lot of stuff for that Shane match. He kind of talks about his matches with Ben. Like, it's funny. He talks about his matches with Benoit without mentioning Chris Benoit at all. Like, you wouldn't know he was talking about unless you knew Kurt Angle wrestled like as one of his rivals. Because it's kind of like they talk about it, but you would barely, like, if you didn't know, you wouldn't know. And he talks about TNA days, and I would just say Kurt Angle knows about that Perk Angle nickname, and he is not a fan of it. He thinks that's insulting. He would say, there's no way in the world you can have a match hot on Percocets. Not like that slander. Yes, he used pills, but he wasn't high during matches. He wants anyone to know.
Oh, well, I guess that's good to know. I mean, I guess he would be an expert on whether you could wrestle a match on perks or not. I would not be an expert on that.
I just laughed because he actually brought up, like, Perk Angle. Type of nonsense is that? You had no match out Percocets. Like, yeah, I took some pills. I wasn't high during a match. I just got drunk after the match. I kept getting DUI. Like, he was upfront and honest about it. Was funny where he was kind of like, you know, as honest as you're going to be. And yes, I'm surprised he's alive. 40 Percocets a day is a lot of goddamn pills. The max is normally like 9.
I don't know. That level of drug intake would never seemed appealing to me. And that type of drug never seemed appealing to me at all. Like, I don't want something that, but I mean, yeah, if you're in that much pain, I guess that's a whole different ball game that I haven't had to deal with.
Yeah, I just thought about it because he was talking about how he had to get the surgery for his broken neck. He hurt his neck. Like, he was having a match with Brock Lesnar. And it was like some turnbuckle move. And he said, like, his neck just snapped and broke it. Like,
oh.
It was like a whiplash thing. He's like, yeah, like, this was before, like, Mania. And he was supposed to have a surgery. He's like, can I get cleared and have the match after? Can I get the surgery after the match? And it's like, yeah. You know how insane that is? you walk around knowing you need neck surgery, you put it off after you have a match with Brock Lesnar?
That's some craziness. Especially since you know you're going to get dumped on your head a bunch of times. But, I mean, it probably wasn't as bad as a Brock Lesnar versus John Cena in his return level type of drop on your head. But a released German suplex was always part of the arsenal involving Brock Lesnar.
It's always been, people tend to forget, I'm like, people who are his size normally don't move that fast. And it's kind of like, you see people like Brock Lesnar, like Aaron Donald, it's kind of like a grizzly bear on skates. What's what to do with that? Like, it's like, I couldn't fathom, like, I'm glad I never go out in the woods of nature. An animal that's like three times my size is faster than me. My brain would not be able to handle that. I'm like, wait, if you're that damn big, I should at least be able to outrun you. It's like, they can run you down and just eat you. And it's kind of like, that don't seem fair. And it's kind of like, you know, when people talk about, I always say, in-ring skills, like as far as like, if you build a perfect wrestler, who's like, who's the best wrestler WWE's ever had, I've always said Brock Lesnar. And the reason I said that is kind of like, he can do 90% of the things that Kurt Angle can do, and he's about 60 to 80 pounds heavier.
Oh, yeah. He is the biggest, most agile person they've ever had. Like, because as much as you kind of like the Bam Bam Bigelows for that type of thing, like, just the fact that he was doing a shooting star most of the time correctly was pretty crazy.
It's like they've never had, like, if Vince McMahon could build the perfect wrestler, he'd build Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Like, Brock just looks like a video game version of a wrestler, and he could actually wrestle. Like, he could have played pro football if he really wanted to.
Oh.
That's how good an athlete was. Like, he could have, and that's not hyperbole, it's not like, you know, you saw Corey, like, no. If he would have went, you know, you're on a practice squad, he probably would have been on the Vikings the following year if he wanted to do that. And think about, he had played since, what, high school?
And oh, like, right.
I'm done with this wrestling thing. I'm going to be UFC champion. Like, we kind of gloss over that whole thing. Like, Brock Lesnar basically dominated wrestling, left after 2 years, almost became a professional football player, and then goes to UFC, and after like four fights, he's the champ. Like, it's no big thing. That's normally not how life works. Like, I couldn't just stop being a farmer. Like, you know what? I'm gonna be a fighter pilot. And then after that, I'm gonna open up a restaurant. Like, no, it takes time to like just jump around from field to field like that, just be excellent in it. And yeah, it's like, I think it's kind of like you see him Brock now where, oh, he just does suplexes. It's kind of like, no. And Kurt Angle has said, it's kind of like, if Brock Lesnar likes you, he will sell his ass off for you. He will do all that wild shit. And I've seen enough of Brock Lesnar. Like, you see some of the matches. Like, he bumping around like he Rey Mysterio. Like, that shit with The Undertaker, he flipping over the ropes and on tables. It's like, if he respects you, he gonna bump for you, make you look good. If he don't, you're gonna Dean Ambrose treatment. That's just how it works.
That is a very true point. And that is not a good spot to be in, the Dean Ambrose treatment. That was really his last bad match. Lesnar, like, just because everyone else he kind of evidently respected, there was something about Ambrose that rubbed him the wrong way.
It was a weird time. It was kind of like, you know, Ambrose was, it's like, it's an Ambrose career before he went on Stone Cold's podcast and after he went on Stone Cold's podcast. And they are not the same. It's like, he did that podcast with Stone Cold and his shit just went downhill fast. and I don't know what it was. Like, he was just in a bad mood. I just remember watching, like, this shit is awkward. Like, Austin is trying to be, like, cordial and have him open up with Dean. Like, he didn't want to be nowhere else. And then, like, Austin, the most patient man to begin with. And he's just going to be like, you know, all right, brother, whatever you say. Like, it's not, he's not, like, warm and cuddly like that. But he was trying to, like, you know, work with Dean. And Dean was like, you know, childhood, don't talk about that. All like that. Like, I don't want to talk about nothing. And ever since that, I remember shit just went sideways real fast.
And now he's world champion in AEW. At least I think he is. I haven't really watched this week's show, so.
Yes, good for him. And I guess we can wrap up talking about another world champion. Did I talk to you? Have I talked to you about my man Roman Reigns, the Tribal Chief?
No, we have not gotten the occasion to talk about the Tribal Chief.
I'm glad. Let me talk about my hero, the Tribal Chief himself, the man who has to beat up family so he can keep putting food on the table and everybody sit in the right spot at Thanksgiving. Roman Reigns. I would never thought the day I would see how they booking him now, and I would just say it is. That pay-per-view match was just insane. Because, like, Roman Reigns is... he's an asshole that women love.
Yo,
like,
yeah.
Roman Reigns is a... he's coming off like a total jerk. Like, yeah, we used to be family. I used to beat your ass with his kids. And I'm going to keep beating your ass now because I have to. Because I get the big piece of chicken because I'm the man, and I got to keep bringing in the main event checks so the family still stays together. I have never seen a heel where it's like, I'm a heel because I know the responsibility of being the main event man, and I got to keep doing it so the family works. And he said he got that. He said he got his motivation from watching Gangs of New York, Gangs of New York, and being like, well, you know, Bill the Butcher. Where it's like, he's a heel when he's finding his action. He's trying to find a way to get that. And you know what, after he said that, that makes sense. See, that's Roman Reigns is kind of like, what he says makes sense. He's just a complete asshole about it.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing. Like, yeah, like, everyone always screams if they're kind of tired of someone being a babyface to turn them heel. And this is, like, one of those few occasions the WWE's like, yeah, let's just really run with this. Like, he's going to be a complete asshole. And it's just like, oh, my God, this is so... well, and it's probably one of the reasons... I'm sure that it's probably backfired a bunch of times when they've tried to do it, but... Roman Reigns is really pulling this whole thing off. Like, Paul Heyman is doing yeoman's work on the mic as usual, but Roman Reigns is doing a good job holding up his end of the bargain too, because as much as Heyman talks for his clients, they still get mic time, and he's been delivering with the parts of the promos that he's needed to go run with.
Your vibe is completely different because it's like Paul Heyman is almost afraid of Roman Reigns. Like, it's kind of like, you know, please call my client the Tribal Chief because I don't want him hurting you. And I was laughing, like, Paul Heyman, like, yes, you're my Tribal Chief. And what Roman say? I don't want you to say it. I already know you know. I want him to say it. He's got to say it. Call me your Tribal Chief. Call, like, basically, you know, say my name. Over and over, and then his brother comes out there and is like, all right, damn it, the Tribal Chief. You changed, Goose. What's wrong with you? And Roman just had that look like, you know, all you had to do was just take the fall. You could have made your money, go home, enjoy yourself. Nah, you won't be a hero. Not gonna beat your ass just to prove a point. Oh, he gonna bulldoze the Rocket Mania. Cause you know this is exactly where it's leading to. And it's just kind of, it's like, it's one of those storylines where as soon as they announced the match with Jay, you already know exactly where it's going with. I'm surprised Jay got as much offense as he got, and you know, Jay carried his weight too, because, like, you know, you keep sleeping on me, and you slept on me the whole time with his family. I'm going to prove I'm not a tag team specialist. And Roman's like, yeah, whatever. You know, I know your brother will win. I don't know about you. How good are you, really? Like, Roman has been a prick, but people, they're not going to, like, he's a heel, but he coming out with abs and new teeth, looking the way he look. You think women going to boo Roman Reigns?
They made him shirtless too. Yeah. That will help the ladies out, I would imagine, instead of him wearing a vest and at least short sleeves and covering most of everything up.
Now, I thought he was wearing, I don't know, see, it's funny, I saw something, I don't know how valid it was, maybe it wasn't as valid as at the time, still, well, he was wearing a vest because he had, like, hernia surgery, it was more for support, and that was kind of like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. Up until that last pay-per-view, when he come out with a damn 8-pack, and it's like, I go on Twitter, and women lose their damn minds, like, oh, I saw Roman Reigns, I'm pregnant. And you can't even mad. It's like, I saw the same thing they saw. I'm like, Roman Reigns, look. And I would just say, y'all better enjoy Roman Reigns while you got him, because he did not get those brand new teeth just to get, just to be fighting on SmackDown. Those Ben Afflecks are for Hollywood. Like, you might have Roman Reigns for maybe a year at most.
Yeah, I do not, like, it is kind of funny, like, I think at this point, Reigns has left two different times, and there's been a terrible power vacuum both times that he's left, and, you know, whichever brand he was on has just become a complete and utter mess in the meantime. And, you know, Chris and I kind of joked about it a little bit. The worst thing to happen to Braun Strowman was Roman Reigns, letting Strowman win the title at WrestleMania this year. Like, that it's so counterintuitive, but Strowman's character is kind of going through a rebuild at this point.
And you forget that he won the title at Mania. Like, it's like, if you hadn't mentioned that, I would have forgotten. Yeah, like, he beat Goldberg for the title, and it seemed like it was just, he went downhill since. Normally, when the championship, you don't get worse. That's what happened to Braun Strowman. Yeah, you're right about, for all the time, oh, Roman Reigns this and Roman Reigns that, it is very noticeable when he's not there. Like, almost like Cena level noticeable. Because it's kind of like, oh, you know, they don't have anybody else like him, you know, and especially now, it's kind of like somebody made a joke saying, yeah, Roman Reigns was acting like this a couple years ago, he'd be gone by now, he would have been in Hollywood. I'm like, yeah, y'all right. between him and probably Sasha Banks, yeah, enjoy them while y'all can, because once you dip a toe in Hollywood and it tend to work, you don't be like, oh, I got success, I'm just going to keep on wrestling. That's not how that shit works.
Oh, what did Banks do?
She's going to be in The Mandalorian Season 2.
Oh, hot damn.
She was in the trailer. And as soon as she popped up in the trailer, they're like, oh yeah, she going to be gone in 2 years.
Oh, good for her. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's definitely gone. And if you can make more money and hurt your body less, that makes all the sense in the world.
I mean, she's a very beautiful woman. She has a very specific look where it's like, you can't help but not notice her. Because there's nobody in WWE that looks anything like her at all. Like, she just stands out. She can wrestle her ass off. She has, everyone, it's funny with the predictions. People assume Sasha Banks was going to be the biggest star just off of charisma. And it somehow became, yeah, I always joke around, like, it's funny where I don't know who's going to lead first. Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch, but let's just say they're not going to be wrestling for like 9 more years. Because I saw Becky Lynch on Billions, and she fit right in, basically playing herself, and it's kind of like, yeah, she's going to have her baby. She's going to start doing some more stuff, and she's like, eh, the man don't need to come back.
Yeah, and God bless if she gets to do that too. Yeah, do not put your body through that stuff. Like, it's not necessary at all.
All you got to look at Nikki Bella. Woman had to retire because of injury. And yeah, Miss, oh, she just did because she got big titties and dated John Cena. I was like, no. That woman broke her body because of wrestling. Got a bad, that damn finisher you made fun of basically jacked up her neck.
Well, that and... I mean, I guess she did end up proving most people wrong. Like, I still think that they were terrible wrestlers early in their career. But both of them came under the influence of two very good professional wrestlers. And shockingly, both of them improved after that point.
I just find the irony of Nikki Bella becoming a very good wrestler due to the ring general, John Cena. Because it's funny when John Cena somehow became... Because John Cena used to go like that klutz who couldn't, you know, trip over his old feet to somehow...
Yeah, five moves of doom, was it?
Yeah. To the point where it's like, all right, if John Cena can't have a great matches, doesn't that make him a great wrestler? Because it got to the point where it's like... I still laugh at John Cena. I guess we can wrap up. Like, John Cena is probably the best, worst, great wrestler of all time. And what I say is, like, everything he does looks clunky. Nothing ever looks smooth. Everything, like, is just a hassle and it's a work. But he just has good matches. And he has good matches with people that no one else has good matches with. He had a good match with the Great Khali. Who else has had a good match with the Great Khali? What, that Punjabi match with Batista? Maybe. And that's about it.
Yeah, I the Great Khali did not have any really good matches. Like, if because it definitely wasn't any of the Punjabi prison matches.
Then the only good match he has was with John Cena, and it's kind of like John Cena kept having good to great matches with everybody he was in the ring with, and sooner or later, it's kind of like, all right. I know they say the whole thing, Ric Flair can wrestle a broomstick to a 4-star match, but I'm like, no. It's, if you're a bad wrestler, there's only so much you can do with a bad wrestler if you're wrestling a good one. Like, John Cena can hang with anybody. Then it got to the point where it's like, oh, John Cena's just good. And it's like, yeah, John Cena got that shitty-ass stunner, that springboard stunner, but he's great. And, another person, I'm like... I know somewhere The Rock's probably laughing his ass off because he was there when Johnson told him, I thought you loved us and you left and you ain't come back, and I would never do that. I would never leave. Remember when Johnson was there? I'll never leave. I'll always be here. You think he coming back?
I did.
Movie star himself?
I did chuckle that he said, because I feel like I saw the headline and I didn't even waste my time clicking on the article because who cares. But it was something like John Cena says he's still not done in the WWE. I'm like, whatever, man. Like, you're going to make a guest appearance every now and again like The Rock did when that feud was happening. And that's all, and it's fine. Like, he doesn't need to be back full-time. Like, that's just, again, it's silliness. Like, that guy already had a boatload of money, and he's making even more money now.
He's a movie star. Like, a bona fide movie star. He's about to have his own limited series TV show, and he's about to, you know, be in the Suicide Squad. And keep in mind, if it wasn't for COVID, we would have saw him be the main villain in Fast and Furious.
Oh,
like,
yep.
It's like John Cena is a movie. Like, you don't. I was going to say two things. One, what did he narrate? Like, what was like, that pay per view or something like that? He was like the narrator for like the opening.
Oh. I forget.
Class of Champions, I think.
Okay.
All you need to know. When SmackDown debuted on Fox, who was there? The Rock. Who wasn't there? John Cena. If that ain't irony, then I don't know what is. And it's like, and I wasn't even mad at John Cena. I'm like, yeah, John Cena busy. And it was like The Rock round time on his busy ass schedule, the show on SmackDown. And he definitely don't need wrestling anymore. But John's like, nah, I'm done. You'll see me at WrestleMania where I'm fighting myself like inside John Malkovich. But beyond that, no. And I'm like, John Cena don't got to prove. He don't got to prove. I mean, he got that weirdo hair now. Like, him coming out in shorts and that Don Draper hair he rocking don't make sense anyway. So it's like, just let him be a rich-ass weirdo with his empty platitudes and just enjoy life. He don't need to. Like, what are you going to do? He going to wrestle Dolph Ziggler again? He going to wrestle Randy Orton one more time? He going to wrestle Matt Riddle? I'm going to make Matt Riddle to a star? Like, that shit don't matter no more. Like, enjoy being rich, John Cena. You earned it.
Oh, man. I will talk about the Beltane beer to wrap things up. Tropical Hazy IPA from Zaftig Brewing Company here in Columbus. It is one of the six packs and one of the more summery beers that I am trying to get out of my closet, since a bunch of tasty fall beers should be hitting the shelves soon. Some of which were the Oktoberfest beers, which I've already enjoyed. But, Beltane beer of the show. At DeFrango 11, at Philly Drugs. Somehow I did not get around to asking about Philadelphia and Pittsburgh this coming Sunday. How did I not do that?
Because I have the feeling that either it's going to be a very close game that Philly eke out a win, or Pittsburgh's going to slaughter Philly, because Carson Wentz is throwing, he's doing this whole, I'm throwing the baggage handlers because all my receivers are hurt, and I got a brand new offensive line, and y'all got a damn Watt. How many of them are there? Got two of them, don't you?
Yeah, we got two of them. One of them really isn't playing, and I unfortunately did see some report that TJ was out. But even then, I'm like, people are sleeping on Bud Dupree on the other side for the most part, so I'm not terribly worried in the pass rush department. It will hurt if TJ Watt doesn't play, but. You don't miss a guy that was almost defensive player of the year.
Just laugh. I'm like, I remember when JJ Watt got a little brother. I'm like, oh, what's his name? TJ. I'm like, oh, it's TJ Watt. I'm like, oh my God, what type of nonsense. And then the fact that he's actually good just irks me on so many levels. I'm like, these big wood chopping doofuses, like, what wasn't enough?
The other one's a fullback. Like, he just picked the wrong side of the ball.
It's like the Von Erichs are more obnoxious. Like, of course he's on Pittsburgh. Like, that's the thing. I'm from Philly, so I always make jokes about Pittsburgh. But it's like, Pittsburgh got a lot of people where it's like, if you're not from Pittsburgh, you roll your eyes. Because between T.J. Watt, whose only flaw is he's just a Watt, Ben Roethlisberger, and G.I. Joe himself, Villanueva.
Oh. Yeah.
And you know what's funny? He's a Pro Bowl left tackle. He's from the Eagles practice squad. And I don't feel bad that they let him go, because he just gets on my nerves. I say, I know it's about the team, but it's about me, because I love America. The troops. And I'm going to do what I want to do. And all that crap. And, yeah, Mike Tomlin, y'all, he's all these years, it's like he did the Lord's work having that team look halfway decent last year, and they still told me, oh, Phil Collins would have had him in the playoffs. I'm going to never respect that damn man.
Yeah. that one drives me bananas. Like, I have loved and have professed my love for Mike Tomlin since basically his hiring. And I'm still that way. Like, how many times, like, how many people did Belichick beat? You know what I mean? Like, that was their biggest obstacle. Like, what the hell are you going to do when you have to deal with that constantly? And they should have, well, they really should have had a solution or at least some way to slow them down at some point. But something always kind of went sideways, whether it was an injury or something like that, that kind of hamstrung him.
Himself kept running into the same damn problem. Like, how many Super Bowls would the Colts have if the Patriots didn't exist?
Oh, Peyton Manning would have more than two Lombardi trophies.
Yeah, like sometimes it's like the Michael Jordan thing, or it's like, you know, imagine a hockey team in the '80s, and you had to deal with the Islanders in the early '80s, and then the Oilers after that.
Oh yeah,
you ain't winning shit. Like, I look at some of those teams, I'm kind of like, yeah, no way they changed the rules. Like the Oilers was a damn. Playing against that, like, yeah, like, if you're not Mario Lemieux, then you basically was not winning in the '80s. If you were on the Islanders or you were on the Oilers, like, that's just how it worked. It's the same thing. It's just how it is. Like, how many people in the NBA don't have titles because of Michael Jordan? The answer is a lot. Like, Patrick Ewing and Charles Barkley would look a lot different if Michael Jordan didn't exist. That's just how it is. Peyton Manning would probably have 5 rings if he had to deal with Belichick and them damn cheaters. And Mike Tomlin's out there winning games with, I don't know who some of the jokers playing quarterback last year. I'm like,
yeah, when Duck Hodges is the good choice.
Duck Hodges. I'm like, if your quarterback named Duck, you ain't winning shit.
Yeah, he was a miracle worker for pulling out an 8-8 season last year. Like, that was the one thing that just gave me hope this year. I'm like, I know that Roethlisberger maybe isn't as good as he used to be, but I'm like, he's still like about 100 times better than anyone else on their roster, so I don't care. Like, he has his own flaws on the field. The stuff off the field can be talked about another time.
But I mean, the whole thing is he's made do, and like, I don't think he's never had a losing season, has he?
No, he's been 8. Yeah, he's been 8, and he's had two. Tomlin's had 2 8-8 seasons. But no losing seasons.
And yeah, perfect time to wrap it up. Y'all, Pittsburgh fans, over. So y'all had Bill Cowher for all those years. And now y'all have Mike Tomlin for all the years. Like, y'all have no idea how it is to struggle for an extended period of time. And y'all And it's kind of like, I can't make too many jokes because I live in Philadelphia and our fans are fucking insane. Like,
oh.
It's Doug Peterson on the hot. So I'm like, he just won a Super Bowl. Like, they just won the damn division last year with a mass unit. Like, the worst thing that happened wasn't the Eagles winning the Super Bowl. The worst thing that happened was Nick Foles winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Good for Nick Foles and his wallet, so that's all I gotta say.
Yeah, I'm watching Nick Foles be a terrible quarterback currently, so But I always tell my younger brother and one of our good buddies who live in the Pittsburgh area, I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't be able to handle living there. Like, I'm glad I don't live in Pittsburgh. Like, I can peek in on the news, but I don't need to talk to anyone about it because everyone hates me around here. So it just works out that people just yell at me. I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, I'm just kind of, like, completely numb to someone telling me they hate Pittsburgh.
You damn cancer? You're like, whatever.
It's just like, you know, I'm more used to the Crosby sucks, and I'm just like, you guys haven't even been, you guys won one first round series, one. Like, kiss my ass. Like, just, and I love how people are just like, because then the other argument is that, like, oh, you guys talk too much about your championships, and it's just like, the fuck am I supposed to talk about? Am I supposed to talk about how terrible the Pirates have been?
Hey, you don't want to talk about your championships. That's what the, let's say, that's what the money is for. The championships are to brag about it. Please.
Just get.
That never stopped the Cowboys having won a championship since the Sega Genesis was out. You think that stopped them from bragging about it? Shit that happened in the 90s? I'm like, the Macho Man was wrestling the WWF the last time the Cowboys won a championship. But you would never know this little Cowboys fan. So I'm like, no. If you win the title, brag about it.
Okie dokie. Well, I've really got to duck out of here, so I'm just going to say goodbye, and I will let you officially wrap things up as usual.
For Kevin DeFranco, I'm Shahida Duhati, and Nick Foles sucks. We are out.